This is Jordan.
This is Emmy.
And this is Death in the Northwest,
a podcast with two lovely ladies who, you know, sometimes
drink a little bit too much wine,
feel a little anxious, and then have to make themselves feel better about their own lives by looking at people who murder people's lives. You know what I mean?
I know what you mean.
Yes. So welcome. 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 Jordan, how are you? How's life?
Fantastic. I just cuddled with my kitty all day, and
they're so cute. He's just so cute. Stinking cute.
But no new news.
Nothing new to report.
Nothing new to report.
Not a thing. How are you feeling about the election?
Praying to God it goes the way we want it to
go. I'm just so goddamn tired.
I am exhausted.
I'm mentally exhausted. Like, I'm sorry if this week I'm not on, you guys, because yeah. I am so fucking tired. I don't really have money. I mean, this is like such a boring intro. I don't have really much to update except for that Carl is going through some changes.
In what
he's
way?
Going through like dog puberty, I think.
Oh.
I mean, like, obviously he's 2 years old, so like he's gone through, like, he's an adult dog, but he's started did we talk about this last week that he started like humping his pillows and then tearing them apart?
Yeah, we've talked about
because my floor looked like a fucking disaster.
Yeah.
Yes, no, he's started really getting at it, really going to town on his bed. So I've stopped buying them for him until this phase passes, because it's very disturbing to watch. It's very Ted Bundy-esque.
Ew.
I know, he likes to kill and do it at the same time.
Yikes.
Not the best. Oh God, what else is going on? Honestly, I just found out that my vacation to Hawaii has been canceled.
When are you supposed
to go at the beginning of mid-December, and it's probably not gonna happen because it's with like my whole family, and like I don't, you know, my parents are old. I'm not like you. I don't have cute cool young parents. I have old parents.
How old are your parents?
62 and 59.
They're not old.
No, they're not old, but they're old enough that they're within a certain age range that I don't want to be taking them on airplanes.
Yeah.
What else is new? I got one of those mirrors.
I know, I want to come over and try
it. You should come over like literally any day this week or this weekend, and we should. Do you want to go mushrooming this weekend?
I'm going to Cannon Beach.
Oh, that's right. Of course. That's why we have. How do you guys go on vacation every? You go to a cool place every weekend.
I fucking love vacations.
I'm so jealous. That's dope.
I mean. Well, last 2 weekends ago was our anniversary. We deserved a weekend. And then this one's a girls' weekend. And then...
Are you going with Leems?
Lima and... Yep. And my friend Alyssa. And we're going to take the dog. And Kaya loves the beach. And we just got our little rain jacket. And she's going to be able to run around because it's going to be rainy. Yeah.
I was just planning with my work friends today a girls' weekend where we want to lie to a casino that, like, we're... rich women who just got out of divorces, like we're like a first wives club.
Ooh.
Because apparently if you can convince them, I was like, we should make like fake websites for our pretend husbands that are rich old men getting divorced from us. If you're rich enough, they'll comp you a suite for like the weekend.
Oh
yeah, because they think you're gonna spend a lot of money at the gambling tables.
Well,
which we're not. Well, we're all teachers.
Do you realize making a website is like $200?
No, I'll make a Squarespace or something.
Yeah, Squarespace.
Squarespace.
To pay for the domain, though, it's like $200.
Well, if you get a good one, it'll be something like Roger Clemens. That's a real person.
Yeah,
that's a football player.
Well, you still got to pay for it.
I know, but it will be something absurd.
Well, will you for sure be able to get something out of it?
Dude, I've made Squarespace before, and they're like $12.
No, you have to pay for the domain for the website. Like Roger... lemons.com.
Roger Lemons. Jordan.
Yes.
Jordan.
What?
We've been telling some really bummer stories.
I know.
This one is still a bummer.
They're all bummers.
They're all bummers.
We come into this like, I got a good story for you, but like it's
but
all
it's always
shitty,
a bummer.
Shit.
This one is more like, if this wasn't a true story, this would make like a fantastic female-led cast movie. So that's why I chose this one. Is it's a great story. It is a turning point in American serial killer history.
Really?
Mm-hmm. And it's probably a murder that you have never heard about in and of itself, but that mm-hmm. many, many movie characters have been based on.
Oh.
Mm-hmm.
Both you know male the, and female?
No, movie? No, no. Oh. You know the term a black widow?
Yeah, yeah.
The wife who kills all her husbands? It came from this woman. And she is a Northwest serial killer, one of the first ever recorded female serial killers in the United States.
Okay.
All right. I'm you ready?
Yeah.
So, this is the story of the six murders that were driven by passion and deception.
Dun, dun, dun.
By the first American black widow. So, tonight I'm going to tell you the story of Lydia, and then this is her real last name. Her name is Lydia Trueblood.
No way.
A.K.A. Lydia Southard, A.K.A.
It's like she was born into like the...
I know. A.K.A. Lydia Southard, A.K.A. Flypaper Lydia, A.K.A.
Flypaper Lydia? What does that come from?
You'll find out. Okay. A.K.A. the Black Widow of Twin Falls.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. So Lydia grew up living a very simple life of a farmer's daughter, but she always dreamed of glitz and glamour and exotic places and exotic people. And she would be quoted saying, "I just want to dance till dawn." But this was not the life afforded to the Truebloods, who were Missouri farmers. So on October 16th.
So they're from Missouri. So
well, let me tell you. I'll tell you. You'll see.
Okay, okay.
On October 16th in 1892 in Keatsville, Missouri. Uh-huh. You might be able to tell me if Keatsville's right since your family's from there.
Nope. You're just wrong. My family is not from any... My
but they live in Missouri, right?
No, my family is from Washington. They live in Mississippi.
Damn it! Similar first couple of letters. That's all I had in my defense. On October 16th, 1892 is when this all begins. In Keatsville, Missouri.
Mississippi.
Missouri! When a little baby is born, and her name is Lydia Trueblood. Lydia was a mild-mannered girl who never... I wrote this. Okay, so I wrote this when... Right? It was during the election night, and I was, like, kind of drunk, and I had to go take a break because I was so stressed out. And I wrote it all in, like, an old-timey Southern accent. So I wrote, Lydia was a mild-mannered girl who never caused no trouble for her family or her teachers. The Trueblood family lived 60 miles away from Kansas City. They were a very close family, and they lived next door to another clan, is what they called them, called the Dooleys, the Dooley family.
Okay.
And as time went by, young Lydia and young Robert Dooley fell in love. The two of them seemed kind of a perfect pair. You know, they'd grown up together. They seemed very much in love. So when Lydia's father decided to move them from Missouri all the way to Twin Falls, Idaho, Robert Dooley decided to follow them. It was in, I know, he liked this girl a lot. It was in 1912, so when she was 20 years old, that Robert and Lydia made their love official, and they got married, and they settled down in a little farm in Twin Falls, and they had themselves a baby named Lorraine. And they began what Robert had hoped would be a long and happy life together. Soon after the two had settled down in Twin Falls, Robert's brother, Edward Dooley, decided that he was also going to come out from Missouri and live with the couple for a while he tried to start his own life out west. And the Dooley family, like I said, where they came from in Missouri, all of the clans, the family clans were like very close. Yeah. So they were very concerned about everybody's security in this family. So even though it wasn't a particularly normal move at the time, he took out a life insurance policy on himself. So he took out $1,000, Edward did, and the policy would pay out to his closest surviving members, which at the time would be Robert Dooley, who was Lydia's wife. On August 9th of 1915, Robert's brother came down, he began this life, and this was a time in history when typhoid and polio and cholera and all of that was not uncommon, and lots of people were dying from them. You know, it's the early 20th century, late 19th century. So nobody thought it was strange when a couple months after Edward came, he died of what was suspected to be typhoid. What was surprising was that on the day that he fell ill, on August 10th of 1915, a second life insurance policy was taken out on him. This time for $2,000 instead of $1,000.
I wonder why that is.
I wonder what was going on. So after Edward passed from quote-unquote typhoid, Lydia and her husband, who was Edward's brother, were the closest surviving family members, and they received the $2,000 in life insurance.
Which is a lot in 1800s.
Back then, modern day is equivalent to over $50,000. So for two little farmers...
Like, that's a good lump sum.
That's fair enough. So it's worth $50,000 or more, and it would seem that the typhoid fever would hit the Dooley family more than once, because a month and a half later, on October 1st of 1915, Lydia's husband, Robert Dooley, passed away from what doctors thought was typhoid fever. And wouldn't you know it, just days before, a $2,500 life insurance policy had been taken out on Robert Dooley.
Okay, I just don't get how stories like these, like families think that I'm going to take out my life and I'm gonna
I think it's because it was like 1912, like,
yeah,
I think,
but you people do this all the time still today. I know, and they think it's like, no one's gonna catch me, you know, like,
you can't catch me, I'm the life insurance man.
Yeah, like, if someone takes life insurance out, like,
but here's the
shortly
thing
before death,
here's the thing, she was not the one taking the life insurance policy out, it was her husband who did it. It was her husband who was convinced to take a second life insurance policy out on his brother beforehand.
Yeah.
Which we will learn. This is a sordid tale, Jordan.
All right.
So, and wouldn't you know it, very recently, our friend Robert Dooley had been convinced by his wife to take out a life insurance policy for $2,500. But it would seem, like I said, the tragedy was not yet to leave the side of Lydia Trueblood, because just 6 weeks after the death of her husband, Lydia ran into town. This part's actually really sad. I shouldn't be doing. She ran into town with the body of her dead infant daughter in her arms, weeping.
Oh.
Claiming that her daughter had drank tainted well water and had died. Now, Miss Lydia Trueblood found herself a very wealthy woman. Now, the child obviously didn't have a life insurance policy out on her. But she had now gotten over $5,500 in life insurance from the brother and her husband. So she had herself a nice little nest egg for a woman of the time, and she was very much alone in seeking companionship. She became fast friends with one William McAfee. He was a waiter at one of her favorite restaurants in Twin Falls, Idaho. And soon after their courtship began, they decided to get married in 1917. Under the request of Miss Lydia Trueblood, McAfee took out a $5,000 life insurance policy that Lydia would be the beneficiary of if he happened to die before her. Lydia, now with her new husband, wanting to leave this tragic life behind her, asked if they could move out of Idaho so that the two of them could start a new life together where she was not tainted by this incredible path of pattern of death that seems to follow her, right? So they moved instead to Billings, Montana, and wouldn't you know it, within a couple months of moving out of Idaho and into Montana. So Lydia, wanting to leave behind this tragic pattern of loss that had seemed to miraculously follow her
wherever she went,
she asked her new husband if they could leave Twin Falls, Idaho, and so the two of them moved to Billings, Montana. Mm-hmm. And wouldn't you know it, within a couple months of moving from Idaho to Montana, William McAfee came down with influenza and died.
How is she getting these people sick?
Well, here's the deal. The stars did kind of line up for this one because it was the year 1918 now, which was when the Spanish flu was coming through. That being said, at the time, you can make a lot of things look like
the flu,
like illness.
Yeah, yeah.
You know? So, you'll find out how she was making people sick. It is a doozy. So, the flu was happening that year, but it still seems really sus to me because This is now the fourth person in her life in a row who has died. It is her second husband. Yeah. He is the third member of her family, and it's the fourth person in general. So, now here's the kicker, is that Lydia forgot to pay the second premium on William's life insurance, so it had lapsed. So she went to collect it in Colorado, and there was no $5,000 waiting for her. So she was pissed. She was pissed. So she decided, well, this meal ticket is up. Better find me a new one. Gotta find me another man.
She just went through husband after husband.
And wouldn't you know it? I feel like the name of this episode should just be, and wouldn't you know it? Lydia, who was a grieving widow in Denver, Colorado, met a strapping young man named Harlem Lewis, which I was like, Harlem Lewis sounds he hot. Sounds cute. Yeah. Like, I just like that name. Oh, baby. In May of 1919, she convinced him to move with her back to Billings, Montana, where they were married, and he purchased a $5,000 life insurance policy.
How is she convincing these people to start a life?
Just, oh, you're going to find
out. Oh, my God.
Basically, she just had like a WAP. Like, she just could make boys do whatever she wanted. This was like the moral of the story, is that she was like this beautiful.
I've never heard WAP be used in an actual sentence.
Yeah, so, girl had a WAP, I'm pretty sure.
There you go.
So she moved to, they moved to Billings, and she got her $5,000 life insurance just in case something was going to happen to their budding new family. And wouldn't you know it, 1 month after the couple moved back to Billings, Lydia found herself with her third dead husband. This time, he supposedly had died from something called, and I don't think I'm pronouncing this correctly, because it's spelled P-T-O-M-A-I-N-E, P-T, the little, like, consonants right next to each other. So I think it's called Tomin poisoning. I think the P is silent, but I'm okay. Not sure. Tomin poisoning. So I had to look up what Tomin poisoning was, because I've never heard of that in my life, and it's just like an outdated old-timey term for food poisoning. But I guess that the tomin is a protein that breaks down in food that's decaying, and that before they knew about bacteria, that's what they thought made people sick. So they just that was what she claimed, was, oh, he got tomin poisoning. And guess who this time had not forgotten to pay the premium on her husband's
Lydia
life insurance. Yeah, you guessed it. It's Lydia Trueblood.
Shocker.
She collected that $5,000 insurance payment.
So how much money is she at? $55,000 so far?
So no, now she has collected, let's see. So she would have that extra $5,000. She would have $20,000, but now she's collected about, no, she would have $15,000, but now she's collected about $10,000 on men. So she, yeah, she'd collect, oh, I wrote this in my notes. That's the next thing. At this point, she'd collected a little over $10,000 worth of life insurance on three different men and one brother-in-law, except for that one of the husbands she didn't get the life insurance on.
Got it. Okay. So where the $50,000 come from?
That the $50,000 was the equivalent of the $1,000.
Oh, got it. Okay, the $2,000. That was confusing.
But so what she would have now with the $10,000 would be worth more than $250,000 in today's equivalent.
Got it.
That's money, but probably more.
Big
for a single woman, that was a lot back then. I would like to have $250,000. Yeah, maybe we should start marrying and murdering dudes.
We should announce it. We should just
we probably shouldn't talk about it on here. All right, so Lydia, who is now
convince Alex to get a life insurance.
Alex, get me a life insurance policy. Lydia was now three times over a widow, so she decided she was going to return to Idaho and try her luck with someone new. But Lydia had begun to have a bit of a reputation for herself at this time. So rather than returning...
Wouldn't you know it?
Wouldn't you know it? Lydia was starting to have a bit of a reputation for herself this time. And so rather than returning to Idaho under the name Lydia Trueblood, which, God, is the best fucking...
That's a good name.
...name for a serial killer ever, she decided to go back as Anna, which was her middle name, I believe, and then McAfee, which was her most recent... No, her second dead husband, not her most recent. Okay. Her second dead husband's name. So, she took the name of her second husband. So now, it's the year 1919, and Lydia decides to go back to the state in which all of this began for her.
Now Missouri.
Idaho.
Oh.
Okay. Now under an assumed name, and now she had quite a nice bit of wealth under her belt. And it was in Pocatello that Lydia,
Pocatello, Idaho,
home of Idaho State University, that Lydia aka Anna, met a strapping young bull of a man. That's how people described him, a strapping young bull of a man named Ed Meyer. The two fell in love quickly. Ed. As because they were just two of the best. This is what is it? They were two of the best looking people in Idaho. Which is my favorite quote.
I love that.
We're the two best looking people in Idaho. No hate to Idaho, but that's hilarious.
That's hilarious.
Two of the best looking people in Idaho.
Was she attractive?
She was super hot, apparently. Oh. There's a picture of her from jail where like I'm like, I don't think that's, but maybe it was like early 1900s hot. Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. I don't know, but she was a very good looking young woman, and he was a very looking good looking young. She was a very good looking young woman, and he was a very good looking young man.
And the two just
so the meshed. Two of them got together. He said, "Girl, I want that WAP." And wouldn't you know it? Surprise, surprise! Right after the marriage, the couple took out a $10,000 life insurance policy on Ed. And 1 month later,
wouldn't you know it,
tragedy struck the Meyer family. You see, Lydia and Ed and their ranch hand, who was named Bill, all went out to Bill. Something called the I.B. Perrin Ranch House for a night of fun and eating and drinking. But the next day, it appeared all three had come down with some kind of food poisoning, all aka three? Toman. Yeah, Lydia had gotten food poisoning and her husband and Bill.
She faked it.
Well, yes. She probably... Yeah, yeah. So they all seemed to come down with it. And the next day, it appeared that all of them had it. But Lydia and the ranch hand, Bill, quickly bounced back from the presumed food poisoning.
But she married Bill.
Just wait. Okay. But our dear friend, Ed, did not seem to be doing quite so well. So he was hospitalized. But after a few days, the doctors really thought he was making like a turn. So he was actually doing better. He was coming back. They were going to send him home pretty quickly. But his wife decided to come visit him at the hospital.
Oh, my God.
And wouldn't you know it, right after she left, he died. Got worse and he died. He died right at the beginning of 1920.
Oh, Ed.
Yes.
I'm sorry.
Now, this absolutely, like, just took you long enough, absolutely did not make sense to the people of Pocatello and Twin Falls, Idaho. Because Ed... like they said, was strong as a bull. He was well-liked, and rumors quickly spread around town that there was no food poisoning that could kill such a strapping young man. All the while, Lydia acted cool as a cucumber, and suspicious town folk began to talk about how the widow seemed to show absolutely no emotion after the tragic death of her fourth husband. As the rumors continued to circulate through the grapevine, suspicion grew among the people to a point where County Prosecutor Frank Stephen and Sheriff E.R. Sherman instructed a man named Deputy Virgil Ormsby to find proof if Ed had or had not been murdered. But when Ormsby came to the Widow Myers,
what happened?
He found that she was no longer anywhere to be found in Idaho. Lydia had escaped.
Lydia.
An autopsy was run on Ed, and this is what they found. He had not died of food poisoning, but wow, an unusual amount of arsenic in his blood. And this is when the heat really turned up on Lydia Trueblood. It was at this point that the pieces of the puzzle began to come together for law enforcement, and they were able to actually track through her past and see, oh my God, look at these bajillions of husbands that she's had that have all mysteriously died of similar illnesses. So they were trying to get the bodies of her other husbands exhumed, and they had a hard time doing it.
Yeah.
But at this point,
It's 1920.
At this point, as they're trying to get the bodies exhumed, Lydia has gotten about as far away as she could for the time permitting, and she had made her way to Los Angeles, California. So the Twin Falls police officers began canvassing parts of the West Coast looking for information that might lead to her, because this had become a countrywide phenomenon at the time. So they found out through back channels, they found out not because of her name, but they found out that she had already married another man. Husband number five, named Paul Southard, which is, she's often referred to as Lydia Southard. Mm-hmm. Not Lydia Trueblood, because that was the last of her last names. Yeah.
Yeah.
So she had married a man named Paul Southard. Maybe it's Southard, I don't know, in Los Angeles. Paul was a Navy man, and therefore He came with a hefty life insurance policy provided by the U.S. Navy to the surviving wife of a member who dies. His new wife, Lydia, tried to convince him to take out an extra life insurance policy on top of it, but he was skeptical, and he said, honey, you know, I'm not going through with it. We have plenty of life insurance as it is. Soon, and again, this was not a common practice at the time to take out life insurance policies. But soon after their marriage, Paul was deployed to Pearl Harbor, and so the couple made their way from Los Angeles to Honolulu. Who knows if the police hadn't gotten there when they did, if there would have been a seventh victim. So while they're in Hawaii, the officers in Twin Falls were able to get some exhumation of previous husbands, and they found, there's been a lot of decomp at this time, and so and it's 1920, so it's hard to find. But they were able to see that in her most recent husband, who was Ed Meyer was the one who they got caught for. Before that was, oh my God, there's so many husbands, I can't even keep track. I'll go look back and look. But they were able to find traces of arsenic. Now, they went to her old home and they asked Bill, the farmhand, have you seen her, like, go out and buy prescriptions or, like, anything that could lead to her having, like, a surplus of arsenic? And he said, no, but I'll let you in the house and you're welcome to search and look for whatever you want. What did they find? So he let them into the cellar. And wouldn't you know it, there was a huge cauldron of flypaper, which back in 1920, flypaper was dipped in arsenic. So she was boiling flypaper.
That's why she's called the flypaper.
That's why she's called flypaper Lydia. Yeah.
Lydia.
So she was boiling it to get the arsenic out of it and then using it in her cooking.
Wow.
I know. Wouldn't you know it? She a crazy bitch.
That's crazy.
So, yes. So here's what happened was that after making this discovery, the Navy officers in Pearl Harbor were finally given the official go-ahead to arrest Lydia Trueblood, a.k.a. Lydia Southard, a.k.a. the first real Black Widow, a.k.a. Flypaper Lydia. So she was extradited back to Twin Falls, Idaho, the place where it all began. And this was reported in newspapers that at the time of her trial, because it had become such a national phenomena, it was standing room only because of how sensationalized it had become. And nothing like this, like I said, had ever happened in the United States before. They didn't have female serial killers. They didn't have the Black Widow archetype. And while she was under suspicion for the murder of all five of her husbands, Lydia ended up only being convicted for the murder of her fourth husband, Edward Meyer.
No.
Yes, because he was the only one they could positively.
She killed her poor baby.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. She eventually fesses up to all of it, but for years she doesn't. So she was only convicted for the murder of her fourth husband, Edward Meyer. As there was not enough evidence, like I said, to prove that she actually could have been for sure the cause of death for the other men, because doctors had said, oh, no, they're sick from influenza. They're sick from ptomaine poisoning, which seems crazy to me because they did find arsenic in the other one's body. But
we know there's a pattern.
Yes, we know there's a pattern. Eventually, she was convicted for the murder of her fourth husband, and she was put in jail for 10 years to life. And she did, in fact, end up dying in jail in 1958. And this was the end of America's first female serial killer.
Wow.
Yes. So I want to talk now about our femme fatale Black Widow's methods and motives.
Okay.
So as I said earlier in the episode, she came from a very simple and, like, humble farmer family. Mm-hmm. And like I said, she'd always dreamed of extravagant things. And she wanted a life of, like, means and travel. She wanted to go to exciting places. And she really wanted to party all the time. She was a party girl. Now, being a farm woman and being born in the early 19th century, or she was born in the late, no, she was born in the late 19th century, early 20th century. She could not afford this type of freedom.
Yeah.
And she knew that. And she knew that it was not something that would be allowed for a woman of her, you know, she wasn't rich. She wasn't from, she wasn't, it just wasn't going to happen for her. So, and again, this is not an excuse for what she did, because the times are the times. You still can't murder people. But she saw each of these men as a means to an end. And she saw them each as, like, a meal ticket. And she knew that if she could get through enough people with enough life insurance, that she would be able to live the life that she always wanted. And this was her entire motive. I don't know why she killed her daughter. I think maybe just to allow her to start over a new life.
Yeah.
Which again is like kind of following that Family Annihilator model. But okay, this I put this in my notes, but like all these murderers need to stop having kids. Like if you think, if you even have the slightest
inkling that you might murder someone, don't have a kid.
Don't have a kid. You need a license to drive a car. Maybe you should need a license to have a kid. I don't know. That'd be hard to enforce.
Yeah, it would.
But okay. So again, the question is, how did she do it? And the answer was that she was soaking flypaper, which had arsenic in it, but she had to do it in really large amounts. Are you looking
her up? I'm looking her up right now, yeah.
She had to do it in really large amounts in order to actually get enough to kill people. Mm-hmm. But what she would do is she was famous for her apple pies. And so she would get some guy in love with her, and he would eat her apple pies all the time, and she would get him really addicted to her apple pies, and then she would just start poisoning the apple pies. And she would just feed him poisoned apple pie for a certain period of time that it would end up doing, like, they'd end up having some organ failure that looked like some other disease, and they would die.
Oh, my goodness.
Mm-hmm. So, and again, this is how she got the nickname Flypaper Lydia.
I'm looking at it right now, a reward post of her.
Ooh, what is it?
$50 reward for
that sucks. What's so interesting about this is that she just had something about her.
Yeah.
Because some of these guys knew about her past. Like, and they still wanted to marry her, and they still wanted to take out these life insurance. And like I said before, I'm pretty sure she just had a whop, I guess. Because again, it usually took her a handful of months between each husband to find one of them to convince them to take out a life insurance policy on themselves. She did it to every single one of them. And the thing that I think is so funny is that even to this day, she's having a weird effect on men.
How?
There is a town historian in Twin Falls, Idaho, named Joe Webster. And like I said, he's been working there for many years. And he's absolutely fascinated with her to the point that his friends say to him that if he had been alive when she was, he would be a dead man. Yeah. Yeah, meaning he would have fallen for her and been killed. And he admits that it's entirely true. He has a picture of her in his living room. Next to his own like family pictures. And he says it's funny too, because it's like the mugshot picture of her in prison. Mm-hmm. But he says he's just fascinated with her because it made a huge change, it was the first of its kind.
Yeah.
It was really the first of its kind. Also, while she was in prison, she managed to get a number of men to start relationships with her through the mail.
Really?
And would get money from them for a commissary, like all kinds of. I just can't believe it.
That's crazy.
But yeah, that is the story of Flypaper Kate.
So what I want to show you right now is, so I'm looking at a poster right now.
Okay, this is her mugshot. This is her mugshot.
$50 reward for Miss Lydia Southard. Escaped from Idaho State Penitentiary. Did you know
she did a number of escaped? Times. After she was jailed, that was actually getting those men to fall in love with her was part of how she did it. So a number of times she escaped from prison.
That's crazy.
Yep. Oh, she was a crafty little bitch.
She sounds really fucking brilliant, to be honest. I know.
But yeah, she escaped from prison, I think, multiple times.
That's insane.
And she used some of the dudes that she got to fall in love with her
to help her escape. Mm-hmm.
It really is fascinating. Her story is fascinating in the sense that, like, I wonder what it was about her. Yeah. So there was something about her that made people do whatever she wanted.
I'm looking her up. I don't think she's...
Like, I know. She kind of looks a little
homely.
That's such a nice way. But I guess maybe for the time, and that was not the case.
Yeah, because, it's true.
Damn, like, girl. And we got to include Idaho and Montana in our Northwest states now.
We're branching out. You're welcome.
Yes. Well, if you want more of these hot, hot takes on female serial killers that we're dishing out, mm-hmm. hot dishes... You can follow us on Instagram at
Death and the NW Podcast.
You can send us an email at
deathandthenwpodcast@gmail.com.
You can follow us on Facebook at
Death and the NW Podcast.
And you can also follow
our website.
Oh yeah, we have a website now. That's right.
It's Death in the Northwest, all spelled out, podcast.com.
Awesome. And you can also just follow us on, not Instagram, I already said that. You can follow us on Spotify and Stitcher and Apple Podcasts Breaker. And Google Podcasts and Breaker and Anchor and
all that
anywhere
shit.
That you want to listen to your podcasts.
Yeah.
Even some places I've never heard of before in my life.
Did you hear that?
I heard a little mew from Little Salem. Oh. I wonder if we got it on sound.
Salem, do you want to say something?
Salem, how do you feel about being 3 pounds?
He's loving it.
He's going, ba-da-ba-ba-ba. I'm loving it. All right, should we say bye?
Yeah.
Peace!
Bye!